Hey, it's Kira Davis here. Are you like me and looking to get in shape for summer? Well, I've got a deal that can help you. You can eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. One of my favorite things about Factor Meals is how easy they are. You can get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Are you looking for something a little fancier? Say no more. You can try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. And if you're the type that likes to look out for the environment while you're getting in shape for that summer bod, you'll be happy to know that Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. And fans of Just Listen to Yourself get a very special deal on Factor this month. Head to factormeals.com/JLTY50 and use code JLTY50 to get 50% off your first month. Plus, get this, plus 20% off your next month. I got to tell you guys that again because I know you can't believe it. Use code JLTY50 at factormeals.com/JLTY50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This is the FCB Radio Network, home of the best personalities and where real talk lives. Online at FCBRadio.com. FCB.
If you like the way I talk, then why am I on your mind? If you don't like the way I rock, then why are we wasting time? We fight and we argue, you'll still love me blind. If we don't mess this whole thing up,
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Just Listen to Yourself with Kira Davis. I am your host, of course, Kira Davis. And as you know, this is the podcast where we take hot topics, hot button issues, and we draw those things all the way out to their logical conclusion. Because I believe that when we take the time to examine our arguments, sometimes we're not saying the things that we think we are. And as you guys know, I think it is important to bring the temperature down of political discourse to really be able to articulate what we believe and what we don't believe. So that means exploring, drilling down on ideas, and exploring critical thinking. Now, before we get started, I have, on a personal note here, I have to say that I'm not sure what I'm doing here, if I'm offering an apology or an explanation, or if I'm looking for some encouragement, or if I'm looking for someone to scold me, I don't know. But I feel like in the interest of transparency, and maybe some of you have been feeling this way too, but I feel like lately I've not been taking my own advice about political discourse, and I've been having a really tough time with COVID restrictions and numbers and the way that everything's getting politicized. And of course, it is my belief that everybody should protect themselves. And if you feel scared, you should stay home. And I don't think you should be forcing business owners to close their businesses and kids to mask, you know, babies to mask up at school.
And I find the arguments that are surrounding COVID to be so insane, like really based in fear and not in information, and really based in the idea that we should be handing over power to the government to keep us safe from a virus. And I just think that is so wrong. I think we should always err on the side of freedom. And yeah, it's costly. Like, that means, yes, we could, a disease could be spreading through society that certainly could spread less if everybody just stayed home for a long, long time. But that's unrealistic. And in a free republic, we have to default to freedom. We have to, or we're not a free society. It's just, you either have your rights or you don't. And I'm getting scared. And I talked about how I did a whole episode on parenting. And I talked about how when you parent out of fear, you're going to make mistakes. And I think it's the same thing with this COVID conversation. Like, I'm scared. I'm not scared of COVID. And I'm not even scared I'm concerned, but I'm not scared of, you know, what's going to happen to my family and friends who really can't run their brick and mortar businesses because they don't have any guarantee that their government is going to shut them down as we move into another flu season. And of course, I'm concerned for my kids and how this has affected their lives and continues to affect the very short period of time we call youth that they've now been living in stasis. As you can tell, I feel very tense about all of this. But I think that my real problem is that I'm fearful that so many Americans are willing to give up their freedom. And I know when a lot of you hear the word freedom, you hear me saying, like, you know, like Mel Gibson in The Patriot, like, grab your guns and go. That's not what I mean by freedom. I just mean your human rights. I don't mean like your rah-rah MAGA or like America First, yay, freedom rights. I mean like your everyday average rights. How Americans seem too willing to give those things up for the promise of the impossible, which is defeating a virus. And there's just no such thing. I shouldn't be arguing my COVID mandate opinions right now. That's a whole show. My point is this: because I see the danger in relinquishing even a modicum of freedom to the government in any respect, I feel very passionately about it, and I feel scared that so many Americans are willingly. I mean, that's one thing if you want to, like, go ahead and mask up and go ahead and stay home and go ahead and keep your kids out of school. You're free to do so. But if I have to do that, I'm not free, am I? And that's what's concerning me, that Americans are too many Americans seem willing to go with that instead of what it, to me, is the right thing, is erring on the side of freedom, because we can't just think about this moment. We have to think about what will happen down the road. So it's caused me to approach COVID arguments, COVID discussions, a lot on social media like Twitter, to be very vitriolic and be very like snarky and kind of a dick on Twitter, especially because it's really easy to get to be a jerk on there. And I don't think that I've not been taking my own advice, because I felt very convicted the other night. I was praying for our country. I was praying for my state. I pray for my state. And yes, I'm praying for recall Gavin Newsom. I usually don't pray for outcomes in political elections. I don't think that's the right thing to do necessarily. But I'm making an exception this time. I'm praying for recall Gavin Newsom. And I just felt very convicted in my spirit that I was not taking seriously my own advice. Through the summer of Black Lives Matter chaos, and through all of the racial issues that we've had over the last year to 18 months, I have implored people to please approach each other with grace, to understand that we're not seeing things the same way. And at some points, we're not even speaking the same language. And I'm asking people to see each other as human beings who happen to have opinions, not opinions with faces on them. And I feel passionately about that. And I've often wished that if people could just step outside themselves for 2 seconds and really hear what I'm saying and really hear me imploring them to set aside these views of your politics as who you are as a total person and start looking at each other as people. I've been very passionate about that. But you know what? That argument has got to apply across the board, and it has to apply to what I feel passionate about and angry about and scared about, right? Because race is, it's easy for me to talk about those things with race because I've been through the ringer with race. And I don't have any more like rage or anger or anything surrounding it. And it's why I think I can speak so saliently about it and why so many people respond to it. And so it's easy for me to sit behind this mic and implore people to be gracious to one another in the race conversation, because in a way I'm sort of outside of it, you know, and I don't mean to make it sound like I'm so above it. I just mean that my experience has shaped who I am, and I no longer feel married to this race discussion. I'm able to look at it from the outside as a Christian, as an American, as a woman, and as someone who has experienced racism, and I refuse to be dragged into the emotionalism that wedges, that creates wedges between people on this issue. Well, it's the same thing with the COVID discussion. You know, this is something I feel passionately about. I'm scared. I have opinions on my side, and I find the opinions of those who disagree with me to be silly and ridiculous. And I don't understand how people can think that way. And I feel that those people are uninformed and that they are, kind of sheepish, like sheep. You know, not sheepish, that's a different thing, but that they're kind of sheep-like in following orders, quote orders, but not really thinking for themselves. I'm not trying to insult people now, I'm trying to tell you where my arrogance lies. And so I think those things, right? And it makes me feel justified to snark at people and snap at people and cuss at people and really just be a jerk. It makes me feel justified because it makes me so angry that people are willing to, you know, damage my kids and their development for what I feel is a gross lack of information and logic. What's the difference between that and someone who is, you know, a Black Lives Matter enthusiast who looks at a white conservative and says, everything you say is stupid. Everything you say is uninformed. Everything you say is idiotic. And I don't understand how anyone can think like you. And I'm just going to be rude to you. And I'm just going to snark at you. And I'm just going to call you names because you don't know what you're talking about. How is that different? You know, I was just really convicted about that. I have not been acting graciously towards the lockdown crowd when it comes to COVID politics, because now it is political. Let's just face it. It's not about health hardly anymore. That being said, I just think I need to take a step back and take a deep breath and remind myself of my own words. And what I'm asking you to do in this race conversation, I see, I realize, right? I do see that it's a tough thing that I'm asking you to do. It really is. Now, when I go into these COVID conversations, I have to lay down my right to be offended. I have to lay down my anger or what I take personally in order to speak with people. Or I have to choose not to engage in the conversation at all if I don't think that I can be civil about it. I just think that that's not just maturity, but it's grace. I haven't been acting very graciously. Now, the flip side of that is that I find people on the other side to be extremely vitriolic, to be extremely condescending, and a lot of times uninformed. And so there's no convincing anybody in this situation. I think with COVID stuff, outside of what I do for work, which is writing and commentary, engaging in COVID discussions on social media, I think it's not good for me. And I don't think I'll do that. Just the way I don't engage in abortion discussions anymore. If I have to speak somewhere, if I'm going to write a column, yes. But to engage in questions and debate on social media, absolutely not. We're not even coming from the same place. We're not even starting from the same place. It's a useless conversation. It is something that there's no good way to have the conversation on social media about abortion. If it's a debate set up, that's one thing. But if it's just people in discussion, no, we're not even speaking the same language. And it just gets people tense and upset for no good reason. So I think with COVID stuff, I'm going to have to switch to that, which is outside of what I do for work, which is unfortunately it is commentary, and I can cool that down a bit, I need to be able to extend some grace to the people who hate me because I think we should be open. I realize that people on the other side of this conversation are not going to be as gracious towards me as I'm called to be towards them. And I don't want to be gracious. And I think what's really getting to me is that my kids are involved in this and their health and safety and happiness is, I can't explain what we've been through the last year. It just seems like it's really hard to tell people, to explain to people what it's like to have been a parent with two children, one about to launch into adulthood. That clock keeps ticking. And I feel like politicians are playing games with my kids, and it's breaking me. It's breaking me, and it's breaking what I know to be right. So I guess, is this a mea culpa? I don't know, a public apology? It's just me being transparent and telling you that I don't get it right all the time, too, and I haven't gotten this one right, and it's time for me to show a bit more grace towards people who don't agree with me on this issue, even if that means me just shutting up sometimes and letting God be God, you know, opening that fist and just letting go of the control that I think I have. I don't have control at all. It's just something that's been on my heart. And I don't know if that resonates with anyone out there or if I'm just talking to myself. That's probably every episode. It's like, that's the big question, right? Is this resonating or am I just talking to myself? Well, let's get started with the show today. Of course, today's episode is on private property rights. And it comes up because this week, President Joe Biden has announced a federal moratorium on evictions. Now, on the surface, this seems like something everyone could cheer because there's a lot of folks who are going to be out on their butts once landlords start collecting rent again. It's been rough for everybody. Lots of people out of work, lots of businesses closed, blah, blah, blah. You know the drill. I don't have to rehash it. So the president came out and said he's going to extend this moratorium, which he doesn't have the power to do. And he admits that he doesn't have the power to do. I mean, the question was, do you even have the power? And even Biden himself said, well, we know that we are working outside the legal framework. We know this. So it's just a stall tactic, I think, because if there's just one lawyer in this country preparing a lawsuit against the feds, and I'm sure there is by now, that it's not going to pass muster. And I can't even imagine that the DOJ would even pretend to defend this. So I think they're just going to do this or say this until the justice system gets some cases threaded up through the system. And then it's like, oh, we'll back off before we get in trouble here. That's my sense of what's happening. Regardless, I do think that this brings up a topic that probably needs to be discussed, which is, what is private property and why is it important, not just to the American way of life, but to freedom and prosperity itself? What does it mean to us? And it is nice to imagine that, oh, we're just going to help people stay where they are and help people stay in their homes because it's been such a rough year. By the way, don't forget, everybody, it's not been a rough year because of COVID. COVID didn't shut down your restaurant, and COVID didn't shut down your bar, and COVID didn't shut down your local small grocery store. Your government did that. COVID didn't shut it down. COVID wasn't killing people in the numbers to shut those things down. You know, if you're going to shut down society, you'd think people would be like dropping dead in the streets, which is how I imagined things being when we started. I was so scared. I thought people were dropping dead in the streets. That's how it sounded. And then I made a call to my hospital to see if they needed anything and found out they had zero COVID patients. And then that's when I started to change my mind about what it looks like to completely turn off society. I have no issues with doing stuff to fight the virus, of course. It's bad, guys. I get it. It's bad. Anyways, you can see that this is still, it's digging at me. It just has a lot to do with my kids and what we're going through to get into the new school year. So I apologize. Please bear with me as I try to focus on today's issue. Anyways, that sounds really nice because it's been rough. But there's so much else that goes underneath it that we really need to consider that I implore you, I beg you. Oh, sounds like today's word is implore, people. I implore you to hear me out on why this is a bad idea for everybody. You renters, I rent too, us renters included, and why private property is such a valuable part of American life. Let's start with this question, though, because I think this sets up pretty well. Steve Portnoy from CBS Radio was at the press briefing today as I record this. He asked Jen Psaki, what's the White House's message to Americans who are now disappointed that the president is signaling he doesn't respect the rule of law? Now, this is CBS News, okay? And this isn't a hate on Joe Biden episode. But it is important to know that what Joe Biden did, he admitted was illegal. Now, I want to say this. That's an impeachable offense. Not being hysterical, not being red versus blue, conservative versus liberals. This is impeachment material. The president cannot break the law. The president can be impeached for breaking the law. Bill Clinton was impeached for perjury. He wasn't impeached for getting a blowjob from his intern in the White House. He was impeached for lying under oath, because that's illegal and the president is not allowed to break the law. So here we have the president of the United States saying, I'm going to break the law. That's an impeachable offense. That's actually quite dangerous. Good news is, I guess, for those of you who are against the eviction moratorium, it's definitely not going to last forever, because when 2022 comes around and the Republicans win back Congress, which it looks like they're well on the road to doing, there's no way Biden keeps that order in place, because then they're just going to impeach him. And they'll win that one. So this is just a game of chicken here, I think, that they're playing with us. But here's Steve asking Jen Psaki about this. What's the message then? The president is doing this illegal thing, and he didn't even pretend that it wasn't illegal. He just did it.
One more question on the eviction moratorium. I'll approach it this way. The president may support the legal justification, but he also publicly gave voice to doubts about the constitutionality. What's the White House's message then to Americans who heard what happened yesterday, heard what was said at this podium on Monday, can't square the two, and are now disappointed that the president is signaling that he doesn't respect the rule of law?
I'm not sure there are Americans evaluating it to that degree. Maybe there are some you have talked to. I don't know. What the president has, his message to the American people, especially those who are concerned.
It doesn't matter what she had to say. Oh, you just need to hear the first part of that. What she said was, I don't think the American people are evaluating it to that degree. What she basically said was, I don't think Americans care. So guess what, Americans? We're going to know what we're talking about when it comes to private property rights, so that we all care. Let's prove Jen Psaki wrong. And by the way, I do think she's wrong. I think if you turn on your mainstream news, it's going to seem like no one cares. But believe me, I think Americans are very well aware of what it means for the government to tell you what you can do with your property. Keep in mind that what this does is tells a property owner what they are allowed to do. Well, Kira, the government tells you what to do with your property all the time. You can't zone it for business if you want to zone it for if it's a residential zone. Sure. Your local government has all kinds of restrictions and all kind, but you can move, you know, you can change, you can apply for a change of zoning, you can move to a new zone, you can move your property to a state that doesn't have those restrictions. This is a federal mandate that says, if you have property for sale right now and you want to sell your property so that you can leave California and move to Ohio to be close to your grandkids in your retirement years, and you've got tenants in there that need to go so you can sell it, you can no longer sell your property. You're stuck in California for the next 2 years or however. They have no time limit on when this is. You're stuck here for that time until the government allows you to sell your property that you own and you pay taxes on. This goes so much deeper. Let's dig into this, because I know this is just the quote beginning. I used to hate it when my father-in-law would do this at church on Sundays, and he'd be preaching for like an hour and my tummy'd start to rumble, and then he'd be 60 minutes and he goes, well, that's the introduction, folks. He's like, we got some good sermon today. I would be like, no, No. He used to do that all the time. I feel like I just pulled a Davis on y'all.
Hey, it's Kira Davis here. Are you like me and looking to get in shape for summer? Well, I've got a deal that can help you. You can eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. One of my favorite things about Factor Meals is how easy they are. You can get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Are you looking for something a little fancier? Say no more. You can try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. And if you're the type that likes to look out for the environment while you're getting in shape for that summer bod, you'll be happy to know that Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. And fans of Just Listen to Yourself get a very special deal on Factor this month. Head to factormeals.com/JLTY50 and use code JLTY50 to get 50% off your first month. Plus, get this, plus 20% off your next month. I got to tell you guys that again because I know you can't believe it. Use code JLTY50 at factormeals.com/JLTY50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey y'all, this is Sarah Lee with Marble Halls and Silver Screens, coming to you today to remind you that if you're curious about all the news coming out of the Marble Halls of Washington, D.C., but don't have the patience for the mainstream media's take on it, this podcast is for you. I cover all the news that breaks over the week from D.C. and then attempt to translate it into what it means for a conservative American audience searching for answers amongst the spin. The Silver Screens part of the program covers the overlap between the entertainment industry and politics, which is significant, and then I offer my own thoughts on some of the newest streaming options and films as they're released. So join me on Fridays for a breakdown of what's happening in politics and movies, and be sure to subscribe to Marble Halls and Silver Screens, an FCB radio podcast, at Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcast. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and come back soon.
Okay, so let's go through some talking points. I'm going to break down the talking points about why private property is wrong. By the way, a great episode to listen to prepare for this, or after you're done, go back and listen to my episode on rent control. This is the same kind of thing. And there was a really crazy incident with Hannibal Buress, who is a comedian. And it spurred me to do, and a property owner. And so it spurred me to do an episode on that. So it's a great companion for this one. But I found a couple of websites. I went with one, like I usually do, that kind of encapsulated all of the research that I did. every site that I searched for arguments against private property was a communist website. It was all communist. Okay. Number one, private property, it causes greed. Private property makes man greedy. He wants to earn more and more money by any means. He does not care even for morality. Private property thus leads to moral degeneration. All right. I think this is a typical communist point. And I think I talked about this on my rent control episode. I was reading, I think it was called The Girl in the Red Scarf. It's a book by a Chinese dissident who escaped, whose father was persecuted during the communist revolution in the 50s. And so she grew up in the communist revolution and eventually escaped and wrote her story. But her grandparents and her parents had been property owners. They had an apartment building that they managed through generations. And so the communists came in and the first thing they did was vilify private property. And they did that by turning the word landlord into an insult. So whenever they wanted to insult people or whenever they wanted to tell people that these are greedy, evil people that hate you and are ruining our society, they would say the landlord's this and the landlord's that. I was so shocked to see that just peppered throughout the book, where the Communist Party would say the landlords want the people to be in bondage to them. They used like the landlords, like capital L landlords. Like it was an official insult. That's creepy if you think about it. Already you're villainizing the idea of private property rights. So that is a very communistic idea. And in fact, that is the tactic of any authoritarian regime, is you slap a label on something and you make that label evil. The landlords in China would be equivalent to in Germany at that same time, the way they would refer to the Jews. These are two evil groups that want to harm society and need to be eliminated. So I always have my hackles raised when someone's painting the idea of property ownership as immoral, you know, because that is, but obviously because all of the sites that I searched for my talking points were communist sites, obviously that's going to be the tact that they take. But I just wanted to draw that out for y'all. This is the other thing that I think worship of socialism or socialistic values is in direct contradiction to Judeo-Christian values. Because here somebody's saying private property makes man greedy. You know, that is a very secular point of view. The idea of having things, of having wealth, of having material is what causes greed. Because then you just want more. As if not having things makes you not want more. You know what I mean? Like if I was poor as a kid, that I didn't want to stay poor. I wasn't like, okay, I'm poor. I guess I just don't want anything else. Like I always wanted better shoes or a better jacket. I wanted to go to college. I wanted a car. Like I wanted more than I had. Not having things didn't make me not desire more. Maybe we need to define greed, but this person doesn't seem that dedicated to defining greed. He just wants to earn more and more. What this person is describing is the love of money. So no, private property does not engender greed. Greed is a sin. Greed is a state. It's a state of being. And the word doesn't say money is the root of all evil. The word says the love of money is the root of all evil. You can have private property and be a greedy bastard. You can be, you know, that's a possible thing. But you can have private property and be generous and be giving. And there are plenty of people in this world, people that you never hear of because they don't advertise on social media, who own plenty of private property and use that private property to uplift others. They use it to put sleepaway camps for disadvantaged kids, or they use it to help families get a head start on home ownership. Or there was I did a story at Red State, I think a couple months ago, about a guy here in California, in Southern California, who saw a story about a mom and her family, and a mom and dad and their three kids living in a motel. We have a motel turnkey program for homeless people who are genuinely looking to get out of homelessness. And you can basically live in a hotel, But the funding for that was live in a motel, excuse me. So it's not great digs, you know, but it's designed to give you a roof over your head until you can figure things out for yourself. And they were about to get kicked out because the money for the program was running out. And so this guy saw her story on TV and said, I don't want that to happen. He said, you know what? What he said was, I'll find her an apartment and I'll pay for it. But no one would take the family because they didn't have credit, even though he was offering to pay like a year's worth of rent. They wouldn't take him. So he was like, oh, well, you know what? Maybe I just have to buy them a house. That's a guy who bought a house for them. That's private property that he was using to bestow a blessing on somebody else. So there's no evidence that the ownership of something makes you greedy. In fact, that's a very childish position to take. But I do find most of the notions behind communism and socialism to be quite childish. Maybe I'll have to do like a larger overview show of both or one or the other at some point. Taking ownership of something is good, and it can create good. You know, ownership is something that we are primed towards as human beings. And when we're not in ownership of something, be it our own characters, our homes, ownership of our life's circumstances, if we don't take ownership of our actions, if we don't take ownership of the environment around us or ownership of our position at work, if we don't take ownership of something, some things in our lives, we upend the natural order and we invite chaos in. And that's why there's so many people in chaos right now, because there's a lot of people who don't want to take ownership for the things in their lives. So ownership, even property, can, not will, but can engender good. Adam and Eve had property. They were from the beginning, you know, they had the Garden of Eden and they tended the Garden of Eden, by the way. They weren't just, we have this vision of the biblical Adam and Eve sort of sitting around and putting grapes in each other's mouths. And no, they worked. If you actually read the word, they did work, but it was good work. It was productive work. It was blessed work. And that was their, quote, property. It was their home. It was what God made for them and bestowed upon them, and it was theirs. So ownership is something that is inherently a human right, right from the very genesis of humanity. And taking ownership is good. That's why if you go back to the hood, it's going to look dirty and chaotic and torn apart and dilapidated. There are other economic factors that contribute to that. But if you go into the neighborhoods where people have houses, you can look around and you can see, or go into the projects, and it's trash everywhere, right? It's nothing looks good. It's because nobody owns anything there. You know, you can't take ownership of anything. You care for something more if you have ownership of it. There's a great interview that Chris Rock did many years ago when he was the innovator of the celebrity late night talk show on cable. That was Chris Rock. And if you've never seen the Chris Rock show, go to HBO and dig into those archives and find it. It was brilliant. But doing a late night talk show is a lot of work, and he couldn't sustain it for more than a few seasons. But he had Jesse Jackson on there once. And Jesse Jackson still was sort of reasonable at this time. And he told Jesse, he's like, here's the thing I don't understand, because they were talking about poverty and black poverty, particularly in the inner city. He said, here's the thing I don't understand. Me growing up in Detroit, when we grew up in the hood, when I went outside our building, my mom said, you pick up the trash in front of our house and in front of the neighbors. He was like, we just didn't get away with just throwing stuff away and treating our neighborhood like crap. And Jesse said, it's a mindset. You know, he's like, it's a mindset. People don't, your mom and dad, back then, you all felt ownership of your community. You, even though people might not have owned all of the houses around, some people did. And you all felt like it was your community and your neighborhood, and you felt ownership in it. And that's what was missing. And that's why if you go to Gary, you're going to see such a man. You go to the hood, forget Gary, whatever hood you go to, name one. It's chaos. It's a mess because people don't have ownership. They don't have a stake in their surroundings for whatever reasons. I'm not getting into that. Some of that is applied pressure from outside forces. Some of that is are the terrible choices we make as Black people, which, by the way, I know some of y'all are waiting for that episode where I'm talking to Black people for once about things we need to do. And I've recorded it. It's in the hopper, but I just haven't heard God tell me to release it yet. It's not time. But here's the thing. There are reasons for that. One of the reasons is ownership. But I'm here in my really cushy, clean, safe, suburban neighborhood here in California, and there's no trash around. Oh my gosh, don't let somebody find that you took your dog for a walk and left the poop bag. Do not do it. You know, you will be splashed all over the neighborhood Facebook page for real. We have real, real feuds about the poop bags. But people own their homes here, right? People have ownership in this community. They have stake in this. They have a stake in this community. And the way we view it is differently. Ownership can engender positive traits, positive human traits. I think we are built to own. I do. We are built for some type of ownership. It might not be a home or a piece of property, but we are built for some type of ownership. That's how we thrive. It's also interesting to suggest that that property ownership makes humans greedy, but the government, which is made up of human beings, is not greedy for owning all the property. Because if you don't own it, they do, right? But they're not greedy for owning it. That's a little bit of a disconnect. Draw that one out to the logical conclusion, folks. I can remember when I first moved to Gary after we were first married. And we owned our house. It was a little 740 square foot house on Hanley Street. A very little humble abode, but it was ours. You know, and it had a lot of work to do. It was something that had been in the family for a while. I think his dad bought it for like $5,000 in the 70s. And by the way, it's not worth much more now, sadly. But we were happy. We were married and I had a home and it was my first home. And I was going to plant some flowers in the front. And I love daisies. And I thought, oh, I'm just going to plant daisies along the walkway. I want some long daisies for people to walk through when they walk in. So I was planting the daisies one day. And this thug. It was always walking around the neighborhood doing whatever. Stopped as I'm like laboring to dig up for these flowers. And he's like, I don't know why you're planting flowers. Someone's just going to come along and steal them. And I was like, oh, and I was so young and so new to the neighborhood. I didn't quite know how to take it until I was like, oh, well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see, you know. But I remember being so deflated and telling my in-laws that I had that experience. And my mother-in-law was like, you know what, Kira, there are a lot of people around here who don't understand what it means to own something. And when you own something, you want it to be beautiful and you want to take care of it. And all they can see is the destruction around them, probably because they're participating in it, right? And that's a way of life. And so they can only see things that are going to get destroyed. They don't see anything as something that's going to be built. This is another mentality change that we need in Black America, in my opinion. We need to start thinking as builders once again, instead of being victims in perpetuity. But I digress. So property ownership can engender good values in human beings. Here's another point, a talking point. It's the destruction of human values. In a private property system, everything is measured in terms of money. All values of human life, such as love, sympathy, benevolence, and affection, are evaluated in terms of silver coins. Every person wants to get the maximum. The sole criterion is property, not value. This person who wrote this needs therapy. They seem to be working on a lot of personal issues. Absolutely not. Again, and please understand, I'm reading from a communist website. So take everything with a grain of salt, right? This is how communism frames freedom, always. So we shouldn't be put off by that. But of course, that's not true. Private property being the basis of capitalism is true. Absolutely. But the idea that it endows property with a higher value than humans is not true. Are there human beings who take their property and elevate it above the value of human beings? 100%. We see it all the time. I mean, look at Al Gore. He's out there preaching about the environment 24/7. Meanwhile, he lives in like a 60 bajillion square foot mansion in Tennessee that has an electric bill of $15,000 a month. You know, that's somebody who values the property above people, because he's out there saying, hey, people need to be taking care of the environment or people are going to die. But then he's participating in destroying it. He is valuing, and he's doing the latter or the former work he's doing to get more money to buy more stuff like that big mansion in Tennessee. So, yeah, of course, people can elevate material over humanity all the time. It happens all the time. It particularly happens in socialism and communism. You look at communist leaders, you look at socialist leaders, and you look at how their people are living and how they live. Like, what's the guy in Uganda? Robert Mugabe? Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe. Okay, Robert Mugabe was a terrible, horrible socialist dictator in Zimbabwe. And Zimbabwe still suffers, but they're in a country where, not like America where we have some homeless people on the street, but like a country where everyone is destitute, where people work for a dollar a day, where food and water are not guaranteed anywhere in the country. This man had like $600 million in offshore accounts. His wife and daughters lived in Paris, in an apartment in Paris, and were raised in Paris. They had private educations. He flew on private jets. He got his health care in the United States. You know, this guy was putting material above humanity, elevating material goods above human value. But I think it's important to note that that guy was the government. Also, he was the government. So there's no, it's ridiculous. This is becoming a bit of an anti-communist show, is it not? I guess these things are inextricable. But anyways, it's not capitalism or socialism that creates greed. It's not an economic system that creates greed. This is why socialists and communists can't ever get it right, because they don't understand human nature. They're always trying to work against human nature. Capitalism actually works with human nature. It works with human nature because it thrives on the drive to have more and want more. And so what it does is it creates more for everybody. That's what it's based on. And then what it does is it uses that instinct to acquire, an instinct some of us might call greed. It uses that instinct for the advantage of all of society, because if you want to acquire and you want to have a business that's successful so you can make a lot of money, you need employees. So you got to hire employees, and then you pay your employees, and then they buy goods and services on the market, and they rent the houses, and on and on and on. You know, it's the trickle down theory, you all. And get a trickle down theory, perfectly sound economic theory. It just came out of the wrong mouth. So politics keeps us from thinking properly once again.
Hey, it's Kira Davis here. Are you like me and looking to get in shape for summer? Well, I've got a deal that can help you. You can eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. One of my favorite things about Factor Meals is how easy they are. You can get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Are you looking for something a little fancier? Say no more. You can try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. And if you're the type that likes to look out for the environment while you're getting in shape for that summer bod, you'll be happy to know that Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. And fans of Just Listen to Yourself get a very special deal on Factor this month. Head to factormeals.com/JLTY50 and use code JLTY50 to get 50% off your first month. Plus, get this, plus 20% off your next month. I got to tell you guys that again because I know you can't believe it. Use code JLTY50 at factormeals.com/JLTY50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey y'all, this is Sarah Lee with Marble Halls and Silver Screens, coming to you today to remind you that if you're curious about all the news coming out of the Marble Halls of Washington, D.C., but don't have the patience for the mainstream media's take on it, this podcast is for you. I cover all the news that breaks over the week from D.C. and then attempt to translate it into what it means for a conservative American audience searching for answers amongst the spin. The Silver Screens part of the program covers the overlap between the entertainment industry and politics, which is significant, and then I offer my own thoughts on some of the newest streaming options and films as they're released. So join me on Fridays for a breakdown of what's happening in politics and movies, and be sure to subscribe to Marble Halls and Silver Screens, an FCB radio podcast, at Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcast. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and come back soon.
Point number three, inequality. Private ownership is a source of inequality. It creates a wide gap between haves and have-nots. The ownership of private property gives power to direct the lives of those who have no property. The property class gets to control the political machinery and uses it for its personal advantage. Their interests clash with the best interests of the community. And in a social system based on private property, the propertyless man has no social value or rights. There's actually a little bit right in here. Yeah, a little bit. It does create a gap, right? The owning private property does create a wealth gap between the property owner and the propertyless. Absolutely true. That is a truth. The property class gets to control the political machinery. Well, I don't think you have to be the property class, but I think that this is a larger communist point, obviously, which is that people with money have access to the political class that the rest of us don't. That's nothing new. It's always been that way. And this is actually a good point. It's a true point, but it doesn't apply to property ownership. You don't have to own property to be influential. You just have to have a lot of money, which I guess you could classify as property. And here's the other thing. Why property is good. You can't earn money without private property. Private property is a stepping stone to wealth. It absolutely is. There's no investor. Every investing consultant is going to tell you to own something at some point. Own gold, own stocks, own a plot of land. Real estate is always like the first point of entry for investments. That's how you grow. That's how you grow wealth. And that certainly doesn't happen without property. 100%. That's true. Here's another point. This writer says their property owners' interests clash with the best interests of the community. Well, no, greedy property owners might. I think a great episode to listen to would be the one interview I did on a regular show with Giovanni Burstow about, was it eminent domain, right? I think it was gentrification. That's what it was. Well, one of the things that Giovanni told me that I never really considered, because I'm always like, hey, if you are going to fix up a neighborhood, fix up the neighborhood. That's good. I lived in the hood for a lot of years. I wish some rich white folks would have come in there and cleaned up and put some new stores in. Like, that's good for everybody, right? But what he was saying is like, it's fine if it happens organically, but what happens is the government gives special considerations to these rich corporations that want to come in, or these rich developers that want to come in. They waive rules, they waive zoning laws, they basically give them, you know, special permission to build in places, and sometimes they eminent domain things for those businesses, and the people of the neighborhoods don't have a say, and then that is a problem. So actually, yeah, sometimes the rights of property owners can, or the desires of property owners can be in direct contradiction to the actual people on the ground, but typically that's because those property owners are working with what? Government. I don't know why we think government is such a, like, an amazing solution to the problem of human nature. Who runs government? We do. People do. It's a weird thing, but it's worship, right? It's worship of the secular. It's worship of authority rather than worship of God, of a creator. But Kira, God's an authority. We'll save that for later, Mr. Skeptic. He's an authority, but we don't worship him as an authority. We worship him as a creator and someone who has, should I take it to church? Yes, as a creator who is so good and so loving and so gracious that even in our depraved condition, our current depraved condition, he has not made us his subjects. He has not made us his taxpayers. He has not made us his constituents. He has made us his partners. He has made us his co-heirs in the kingdom. I mean, come on! Can I get a hallelujah? Somebody out there better be shouting right now. Here's this next point. Oh, and by the way, the other thing I wanted to say is inequality. That is a big communist talking point as well. Private property, you absolutely, look, if you want to start building wealth, kids, I'm trying to get my husband to do this for my daughter. I'm trying to purchase a tiny piece of property anywhere in the United States, anywhere for like $5,000. Just a crappy shelled out building in Detroit. There's plenty of those. Some rundown building in the middle of Texas somewhere. Anywhere. Just nothing that she has to do anything with. Nothing that we have to do anything with. Just that we have the paper. And when she moves into adulthood, she will move into adulthood as a property owner. And she'll always have that. I think kids and parents of young kids, if you can find a way to do that right now, do it. Go buy a piece of property. Go buy 1 acre somewhere for super cheap. You spend $5,000 a year on Starbucks. Don't buy Starbucks this year. Buy a cheap piece of property. You can buy little tiny plots of land for less than $5,000 across this country, particularly if you go into some really depressed inner city areas. You can and you should. Because that you'll be giving your kid an important stepping stone to wealth. But that is the beauty of capitalism. Socialism and communism says that we're all supposed to stay the same. And what typically that means is we have to keep people from achieving. Because there are people that are just high achievers, and it doesn't matter what you do, they're always going to be high achievers. You have to keep them from achieving in order to keep everyone the same. But capitalism says, and property ownership and that wealth gap that it creates says, here's something for you to aim at. What people like the person who wrote this blog don't tell you is that we do have wealth gaps in this country, but it's fluid. The class system in the United States is fluid. People are always moving up and down the ladder. So you're not fixed. If you're born in poverty, you're not going to stay. You don't have to stay in poverty. If you're born middle class, you don't have to stay middle class. And we all know, because we've seen plenty of examples, that if you're born rich, that doesn't mean you're going to be rich your whole life. The gap is good. We forget that the gap gives us something to jump towards. It's a good thing. And I say the sooner you start aiming at property ownership in your life, the better. And if you're young, now is the time to start. Like, let me just tell you, take it my advice. Go get a cheap piece of property somewhere that has absolutely no value. I get it. You don't have a lot of spare money to spend right now. But if you can get your hands on $5,000 and you can find a small piece of property that you just put in your kid's name, it's just invaluable what you're doing. And I'm late to this party. So my son's an adult now, too late for him. But my daughter's still a teenager, and I'm going to make sure that by the time she leaves high school, she's a property owner. And this last the last point this person makes is that it's economically inadequate. It doesn't do enough. Private property means that some people will go without and some people will have more. But I certainly don't believe that that's true. Because again, all you have to look at, you can just look at any communist dictatorship. Look at Mugabe in Zimbabwe, right? He had everything. The government owned everything. He was the government. The government was a socialist government, well, communist government. They took all of the private property, including your right to just own what's in your house. The state owned all of that. And Robert Mugabe was the head of the state. And did that do anything for inequality? Was that an effective economic application? Absolutely not. The people in his own nation were starving to death. So there's no indication that that was some kind of morally superior system. Well, Kira, they just didn't do it right. You know, every socialist claim. Well, it just hasn't been done right. Every communist claim. It hasn't been done right. I mean, how many times do you do something before you realize, well, maybe it just can't be done right. You know what I mean? Or maybe you're just a racist. That could be it too. You know, maybe you're like, well, they couldn't do it right because they're just dumb Africans, or they're just dumb Asians, or they're just dumb whatever, insert whatever racial or ethnic group into there. But we in the West, of course, because we're the West, we're the best. Is that what you're telling me, my dear progressive friend? That those people are just too dumb to do it right, but we'll do it right. Maybe it's just a dumb idea. Maybe it just doesn't get done right. Okay. It's important to have ownership. It's important. It's a human right. The world changed when people had the right to own property. The world changed. This country is absolutely what it is today because people had the right to own the fruits of their labors. And that's how it was in the beginning. Private property can act as an incentive for production. We saw this in the founding of the United States when the first colonists came over and they suffered a terrible winter and they did horribly. And part of the reason they did horribly, and this comes directly from the autobiography of George Washington, which is actually a history book. It's 7 volumes. I've talked about it before. It's a history book. It actually uses the... Do you remember when Rush used to read that Thanksgiving story, R.I.P. Rush? Every year he'd read a story about the real Thanksgiving. And I'm going to take that up now because I know where he got it. He never would tell people where he got it. Now I know where he got it. He got it from this book. It's actually a historical story, a recorded story with documentation and all. So in the beginning, the colonists came and they agreed that they didn't want to be under the rule of one greedy king or bishop or baron or whatever they were running from in the UK, or what did we call it then? Great Britain, the homeland. And so they wanted to say, they said what we always say. Whenever we say we're going to do it better than our parents, we're like, we're going to live in this communal situation and everybody's from each according to his ability, to each according to his need. It's going to be really great because we should be able to help each other instead of just helping the king, which again, on the surface sounds like a great idea. And so that's what they started to do. But guess what? They didn't have a real great understanding of human nature. And human nature dictates that a certain portion of the population will be incentivized, will be hard workers, will feel like the right thing to do is to put your shopping cart back in the corral when you're finished shopping, you reprobates. And then another part of the population will say, well, if someone else is doing the work, why do I don't need to do it? You know, I'm going to get fed anyway, so that's fine. And by the way, I don't need to take my shopping cart back to the cart corral. Ugh, don't get me started. COVID and cart corrals has been what's been on my mind for the last week. And so there's a certain portion of people that won't do it. And that's what happened. And so what would happen is there would be farmers who would be working very hard to feed the whole community. but there would be nothing left for their own families. And so instead of having a plentiful harvest that they worked for, and farming is hard work, they were having to take a potato out of the mouth of their child and give it to the guy who sat on a barrel drinking all day, or just, you know, smoking tobacco all day or whatever. And so what happened was the producers started to feel angry. They started to feel resentful. This isn't fair. And if this is how it's going to be, we just won't work as hard. What's the point? If my family just gets scraps as it is, then maybe we just make scraps. And the citizens almost starved to death. The colonists had a horrible year. Thankfully, their native neighbors came and showed them how to create new crops and how to take care of their crops in this climate. And they shared with them some of their trapping and fishing techniques. And then I can't remember his name, James, what's his face? He was over in England for a while dealing with whatever. And he came back and he saw, like, it's like that, that GIF. There's a GIF that people will post when it's like, what's going on here? It's from that show Community. And Troy is coming in. Troy is Donald Glover. And he's got, they're playing a role-playing game, and then he's gone out for pizza. And when he comes back in, he's all happy because he has the pizza. But while he's been gone, the role-playing game has just gone to complete hell, and there's flames everywhere. People are screaming, and they've been fighting each other. And he walks in with the pizza like, what did I just walk into? That's what this guy was like when he came back from England. He was like, what? I left you guys, and you guys were healthy and fed and looked like everything was under control, and now half of the people have starved and it's a mess and nobody's working and the farmers have stopped working. What's going on? And the people told him, we don't want to work for everybody anymore. This isn't right. We want to be able to barter our services. This doesn't fit. And we're starving now. Thank goodness our native neighbors have come and helped us to understand the concept of building flourishing crops, and we just want the ability to barter, even with our native neighbors. We can't barter with them if we don't have anything to barter with. And so the guy, James, what's his face, said, absolutely, I get this. So we are switching to a barter system. And now if you can't work, you can't eat. That year, they had a very plentiful harvest, and they celebrated together with their Native American neighbors, who at the time were simply neighbors. And at that time, in that time period, it wasn't what it eventually came to be. It was very different in the beginning. At least that's what our documentation tells us. And so they invited their neighbors to come and celebrate with them and celebrate the plentiful harvest, celebrate the new knowledge that they were given by their new friends, and also celebrate this thriving and flourishing that came about when they finally decided to ditch the socialist system. Private property ownership gives incentive. There's no bigger incentive than personal incentive. And people who think that property rights are, well, let's just say it, communists, think that incentive is somehow bad, that people should only do the things that they want to do. I mean, what a kind of elitist attitude. Like, you should only have to do the things you want to do. That is not at all how the world works or how human nature works. We thrive when we must do the things we don't want to do. And there are rewards on the other end for that. That's incentive. So private property pushes incentive. It helps with wealth building. And it encourages production.
Hey, it's Kira Davis here. Are you like me and looking to get in shape for summer? Well, I've got a deal that can help you. You can eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. One of my favorite things about Factor Meals is how easy they are. You can get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes. with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Are you looking for something a little fancier? Say no more. You can try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. And if you're the type that likes to look out for the environment while you're getting in shape for that summer bod, you'll be happy to know that Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. And fans of Just Listen to Yourself get a very special deal on Factor this month. Head to factormeals.com/JLTY50 and use code JLTY50 to get 50% off your first month, plus, get this, plus 20% off your next month. I got to tell you guys that again because I know you can't believe it. Use code JLTY50 at factormeals.com/JLTY50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey y'all, this is Sarah Lee with Marble Halls and Silver Screens, coming to you today to remind you that if you're curious about all the news coming out of the Marble Halls of Washington, D.C., but don't have the patience for the mainstream media's take on it, this podcast is for you. I cover all the news that breaks over the week from D.C. and then attempt to translate it into what it means for a conservative American audience searching for answers amongst the spin. The Silver Screens part of the program covers the overlap between the entertainment industry and politics, which is significant, and then I offer my own thoughts on some of the newest streaming options and films as they're released. So join me on Fridays for a breakdown of what's happening in politics and movies, and be sure to subscribe to Marble Halls and Silver Screens, an FCB radio podcast, at Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcast. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and come back soon.
So as we close out the show and we talk about private property rights, why they're so important, your property rights give you the freedom because you have ownership. The government does not own everything around you. When the government owns everything around you, you get Robert Mugabe. When the people own everything, you get the American presidency that changes hands every 4 to 8 years, which is a good thing. But I know that some of you may even be the beneficiaries of this eviction moratorium. But that's short-sighted. And you may feel like that the president should be doing this and this is the government's place to do this. But that's short-sighted. And in fact, I find that to be greedy. I think that is a type of greed. Why can't I have what I need for free? That's greedy. Because none of us gets what we need for free. Nothing is free. Someone is paying for it. So what you're saying is someone needs to pay for it. What do you think? Do you think that the landlord has a moratorium on his mortgage? That he's had one this whole time? You might feel like, well, if I get a relief on my rent, but the landlord does not get a relief on his rent. If he does not pay his taxes, the government seizes his property, which might be part of the strategy here, to be honest. Maybe the government does want to own more of our private property. So if more of us have to go into bankruptcy and the government could just come and buy it up, maybe that's just a little bit too tinfoil hat. I don't know. But I will say that your landlord has responsibilities too. And most of the time, your landlord isn't some rich, white, well-to-do white guy that's just fat and walks around with a big turkey leg in one hand and a cigar in the other and is just like so rich that he wipes his butt with his money. That's not who the average landlord is. The average landlord is probably a person who has an investment property or purchased a property as part of their retirement. is a middle-class person who just is looking for some passive income of some type. Again, go back and listen to my rent control episode. And Hannibal Buress, who was a little kid, grew up on the south side of Chicago, little black kid. People told him, you'll never have anything, you'll never own anything. And so what did he do when he first got a paycheck? I'm buying some property. I'm buying a piece of my dream. And he bought some property where he lived on the south side. You know, he did his neighborhood right. And got dragged over the coals for it by the online brats. Most of your landlords are like him. They're people who had a dream, who were you, who rented from someone, and then said to themselves, I never want to rent to anyone again. I never want to rent again. I want to be the owner. I want to be an owner. What about those people? What's happening to their families? What's happening to their bills? Just because they own something big and you only own something small doesn't mean that they're not in trouble too. It doesn't mean that they're not hurting too. So instead of blaming your landlord for kicking you out, you need to blame the government that shut down your job, that shut down your church, that shut down your school, that shut down society. It's not your landlord's fault. It's your government's fault. And your landlord's being asked to pay the price for it right now. And there's no evidence that your landlord deserves to pay the price. Even if you think, well, he doesn't fix my water in time or my heat's broken or whatever. I can't, again, go back and listen to that episode to explain. I explain all of the machinations of ownership and what that means and why people think they know what it means to own a building. But it's not anything like you think it is. And it's certainly not lucrative for most people. The same way people open restaurants and bars because they're passionate about it. There are a lot of people who are passionate about property ownership. And so they know they're not going to make a lot of money. They're not going to clear a lot of money. That's the other thing. A lot of these landlords are not clearing a lot of money. They have so many expenses to even just pay taxes on the buildings that it's really hard to even break even. And now for a year, they haven't been able to pay their mortgage. And now more? Now you're still not going to pay your rent? Thanks to an admittedly illegal act from the President of the United States? We should all be worried about that. If you ever want to own something, if you ever want to have more for your family, even the communist Patrice Cooliers from Black Lives Matter, even that stupid communist knew enough to take her money from fundraising off of the backs of hurt black people to buy a $1 million home in Corona here in California. Even she knew that proper. And when people asked her about it, she justified it by saying, I'm doing this for my family. Even she knew that in order to have better, property is the best way to get there. It's a stepping stone to wealth, not just for you, but for the generations under you. Don't you want to be that person someday too? Then maybe you need to have a little more grace towards your landlord and you need to start figuring out how you're going to pay your rent. Now, there's an employee shortage out there right now. And I know a lot of y'all, this is morphing. Probably need to close up, but this is morphing into a little lecture. Stay with me. We're almost done. I know a lot of you out there who feel like you're too good to go to that dishwashing job, you're training computers. I met a gal once working. I was doing a temp job, doing some temp work and in an office situation. And this woman was working. She was retired. She was retirement age. She came out of retirement because her husband had been a minister for a local denomination. I won't mention the denomination, but an established sort of stuffy denomination. And he had been a minister and that had been his vocation their whole lives. I don't even know how like spiritual they were about it. It was just his job. It was his vocation. And the church closed. So he was out of a job and he's applying for pastoral positions within his denomination, which as you can imagine for established denominations, it's really hard to find job openings. So she had to come out of retirement to work and she's hurting and she's tired every day and she's complaining every day. Like she's so stressed because she barely makes enough. I'm like, what's your husband doing? well, he's just searching for jobs. He's just at home and he likes to build model trains. So that's a thing that he's doing to keep himself busy. And I'm like, why isn't he out getting a job? And she's like, well, it's just there aren't a lot of jobs in his vocation. You know, it's really hard. And I'm like, yeah, but he has a family to support. So who gives a rip if you work at a church? Go freaking work at McDonald's. You know what I mean? Your wife is getting up at 4 a.m. every day to commute 2 hours to go to a job she hates and that she can't really do properly because she's in so much pain and poor health so that you can sit home with your model trains? What are you doing? This guy thought he was too good to get back into a manual labor. He thought he was too good for any job that wasn't being in front of a congregation. And there's too many of you out there right now who think you're too good for that. And that's why you can't pay your rent. It's not that you can't pay your rent, it's that you won't. Because there is no shortage of jobs out there. They're just not necessarily the jobs you want. Welcome to real life. Welcome to planet Earth. Some of you all need to be slapped out of your slumber. You do not have the right to sit at home, and you do not have the right to push your laziness or your poor choices onto a person who is actually working to own something and giving you the privilege of living in their property for a price. And that person gets no breaks. That person gets no funding. That person still has to pay their taxes even though you're not paying rent, but you want to cheer this illegal moratorium. Go to work. You are not too good to wash dishes at McDonald's. Let me repeat, you are not too good to wash dishes at McDonald's. I don't care if you spent $200,000 on a Harvard education. I really do not care. I don't care if your last job was the CEO of some very hoity-toity Southern California business. I don't care. If you can't pay your rent, go get a job that gives you money to pay your rent. And if the one job isn't enough, you'll need two. So you need to like maybe make some extra room in your schedule. There aren't enough disabled people in this country to justify the amount of welfare we are giving to people to sit on their asses. There aren't enough. This I know. Statistically speaking, there aren't enough. So there's plenty of you who are sitting at home when you could be out there working. And no, you don't deserve the job in marketing that you were trained to do just because you went to college. You want a job in marketing? Go get a job washing dishes at Chick-fil-A. Figure out how to get into the training program, the corporate training program, through there. And start working your way up to the marketing department. Get off your entitled patootie and go to work the job that sucks. Those are the people who will be successful. You're going to be stuck taking handouts for the rest of your life and complaining about people who have more than you and not understanding that those people worked more than you a lot of the time. But it's a lot of folks that have just discovered the wonders of welfare, being able to sit at home and not pay rent and get an unemployment check. And some of them want to go back to work but feel unsure if their work's going to stay open or closed and so would rather just stay on unemployment and not risk having to go through all that red tape again. Understandable. Again, the government's fault. But some of y'all are out there thinking, I could get work, but I don't want to work in food service. I don't want to work at a hotel. I don't want to work as a janitor. You're the people that need to get off your asses and go get that job you don't want and start working so you can pay your rent. Stop making everybody else pay your rent. Okay, that's it for this episode. I put a lot into this. There was a lot of different thoughts into this episode. So feel free to contact me and share your thoughts. JLTY@protonmail.com, JLTY@protonmail.com. Join me over at davisnation.locals.com. In fact, I'm just finishing this and I'm getting on a live stream over there at Locals. So sometimes I just like to do some stuff and pop in and see what people are thinking. It's an Ask Me Anything stream. So I'm going to be doing more of those. And if you have always wanted to personally ask me a question, you know, a question you know I'll hear and you know I'll respond to, then go and sign up for davisnation.locals.com. Your subscription fee helps keep voices like mine alive, helps give us a place to go where we're not going to be censored. And given that Facebook has just partnered with the AP and Reuters to start creating more, quote, boundaries for legitimate news, it's getting rougher out there, not better. And a lot of us are going to have to move behind paywalls to keep ourselves fed while we give you real and good information. So when you join over there, that's what you're doing. And maybe you don't participate. Maybe you just come over there and you can drop a one-time fee as well. It might be something that you just are like, I don't really want another social media website. I don't really want to get to know new people, but I do want to support Kira, but not month to month. You can do a one-time fee and do it that way. That's a thing that sometimes people do. But if you don't want to do any of that, but you still want to support me, a really great thing you can do is to give us a 5-star rating and give us a review on iTunes. I'm aiming to get to 1,000 reviews. So I really appreciate it if you guys could help me get there. Love you so much. So glad to talk to you guys. And listen, while you're out and about this week, every now and again, just take some time to stop and listen to yourself. Good luck, America.
If you don't like the way I talk, then why am I on your mind? If you don't like the way I rock, then why are we wasting time? We fight and we argue, you'll soon love me blind. If we don't mess this whole thing up, guaranteed I can blow your mind. And tonight I'm alive in a dollar sign, guaranteed I can blow your mind.
The FCB Radio Network. First class broadcasting worldwide.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.